Have you ever done or tried virtual reality? What is your experience with that, Dallas?
Wait, are we starting to record?
I mean, we're recording, but okay. No, I just, we don't need to really do it in the episode. I just was curious if you've ever done it.
It's quite a question to ask. What is my experience with virtual reality?
Yeah.
Well, you know, Trav, I really like Jamiroquai. Everything's fine. Take it easy. Everything's fine. You broke my heart. Remember a time when I was young and nothing hurt, but I know everything's fine. I know everything's fine. Everything's fine. So everything's fine. Next episode up. It's Sunday. We're doing two in 1 week.
Yes.
And maybe we can try to continue that trend. I'm Dallas.
I'm Travis.
You can follow us on Twitter at EveryFinePod. It's at EveryFinePod on Twitter, or go to our website, everythingsfinepodcast.com. That is where you can check out other stuff. Basically, that's where you can go donate, give us money, because we need money. So give us that money. Just go to everythingsfinepodcast.com and make it very easy for you to donate. And Travis even set up so you can donate via Bitcoin, like crypto donations, yes. Which, you know, we'll get into that in a little bit.
And the Patreon is coming. I'm a little behind on setting it up, but that will also be coming if you know a Patreon is. We'll be sharing that info within the next couple episodes.
Oh, do I know what a Patreon is? Yeah, this Oculus thing, I think that it's a thing you put on and it's connected to like a game console, right?
That's what I thought too until I asked last night. And no, it's just the headset. And then you have like two controllers. They're kind of like normal controllers, but they have this like circle that goes over the top of your hand. It's kind of hard to describe. And then you have like a trigger that is where like a trigger would be, you know, to shoot or whatever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then you have another trigger, which is like to grab, because now you have hands that you can see inside of this thing.
Weird.
Yeah. Yeah. It got to the point last night where I was like, the world's going to really get different once, because this is the beginning of it. You know what I mean? It's like the original Nintendo.
It's like Hotmail. For yes, Gmail.
Exactly. And so like your brain can go into like, well, all the good ways that this could be used for like training, like I could think of mechanics or, you know, just different things that you could simulate. Me being a lighting designer, I was like, oh my gosh, without having the lighting console there or the stage or anything, you could have your lighting design loaded into a virtual environment and literally program the show and see what it would look like.
That's crazy.
Pretty real close to what it's going to really look like without any, I could be sitting in my garage like I am now and literally be in that environment. And so the one first game we played was with, we're archers or whatever, medieval times. And there's ogres running, trying to get in the castle, and you can like get on these different turrets and shoot them with bows and arrows. And it's bizarre because like when you're in a video game, the creature is the size of the screen that you're playing it on, right? It never gets bigger than that or whatever.
Yeah.
In this world, like the ogre and the giant that's running up to you gets as big as you think it would be in real life.
Wow.
Yeah. And then starts like swinging at you and it's again, it's the first steps. It's like Super Mario Brothers. And now we're playing, you know, God of War or whatever. On consoles, but when this gets to where it's going to be, it's either the benefits could be tremendous and the negative side could be also like, my sick brain obviously went to like, well, what about porn on this? And then I made a joke with somebody else and they're like, oh, that's all people are using it for, Travis. And I'm like, gosh, I wanted to be funny. And then it's not funny.
Most of the technological advances in our life have been because of porn. We have to.
And like, we can get in like the grossness of porn or the greatness of porn or whatever. Everyone has their opinion on it.
I don't know. Like, why would you get into porn at all?
Like birth rate. Like, why is anyone going to have sex anymore?
Well, that's remember
like if you could hook up like a thing to your thing and have this helmet on and, you know,
wasn't that Demolition Man?
Hayek, why wouldn't that?
That was Demolition Man. In Demolition
Man. No, in Demolition Man, they at least did it kind of like with someone else in the room.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's crazy. I think I did.
It's crazy. And we are on the beginning stages of this being like a thing. If you
are telling me that I don't have to touch my wife in the future, I am on. Give me the Oculus.
Just kidding. Yeah, I mean, it's...
That's crazy. I think yes. I did one at a friend's house where it was connected to like an Xbox or something, but it was you were dropped into a cage underwater to like look at sharks. Yes. And then like the shark like attacks the cage and stuff.
Yes.
And it did like mess with me because yes. you look down and there's your feet and you're trying to like walk and move. It was, it did yes. definitely mess with my head.
In the zombie game that you get pistols and then you get like a big gun, like an assault rifle.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at this thing in the virtual world and it looks like they took a 3D model of a gun
mm-hmm.
and perfectly skinned it so it looks perfectly real, and then you get to hold it in your hand and do this with it.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's a little much.
Well,
and it's yeah, like see, phase the, one, like I was saying.
The funniest thing about those games though is I see them, I mess with them, and then I have no desire. Like there's so many people around me right now that I know, not around me, I guess, but that are in my life that play like Call of Duty and all those other games, and they're into PC games and all this other stuff. And I've never gotten into it ever. And I don't know why.
I mean, kind of not true. You always had a console and you always
played. I know I have MLB a console. I play MLB The Show. I play MLB The Show. I used to play NCAA football. No, but it's weird to me because I enjoy those games. And I enjoy like fantasy ownership of baseball teams, like all the nitty gritty, like behind the scenes stuff you have to, like, I enjoy that. So it's always strange to me that I haven't been able to make that leap into like Uncharted or Call of Duty or something like that. I don't know. I think it's just too much going on for my brain.
Well, I agree with that. Like in those games now, it is, and especially with me, the glasses, you know, I wear glasses or whatever. It is a lot going on. It's very much, I know, excuse me, but you have to have time to invest in like learning the skills of the game nowadays. Does that make sense? Like the kids,
totally.
I need to sound like the old man, but the kids, it's intuitive because that's just all they know.
Yeah.
Like we went from this, and I'm holding up now at an original Nintendo controller.
It's beautiful.
I'm building a Raspberry Pi with all those on it. Anyways, where it was just like two buttons and a directional pad. Like that's what we learned on. And so the investment into like learning how to play well so you can be good at what all these like 14-year-old kids are doing, it requires a time commitment that people like you and me with kids, you know, unless they're independently wealthy or whatever, don't have time to do, unless it's the off season. You know what I mean? Like we just, honestly, I would do it so much more. I do enjoy it, but I don't have the time. Like, I don't mean to sound like an old curmudgeon, but it's, they're so much more complicated nowadays that you have to invest old people brain energy into keeping up with the kids, you know?
Yeah. I don't have the time. I literally been reading the same book for 4 months. So I definitely don't have the time for video games. All right. Listen, we got a lot to talk about unlimited time today because it's Sunday. It's the Lord's Day.
Yes.
So let's get into current events.
And now the news. The top headline comes from the Far East, where again today,
is current events. Talking about what's going on in the news.
We are drowning in news.
By the way, you didn't. I got nothing from you about the sweepers. You didn't say, "Oh, these are fun."
Good job. They're amazing, Dallas. I really appreciate the time you took to produce. In fact, I was thinking about it in the shower, and I'm like, I need to put more effort in. We're really going to do this. Let's do it.
You do the hard part of recording and editing, but I can't wait for the conspiracy. You froze on me. Uh-oh.
I did. No, I'm
here. Are you okay? Are you there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Hey. I can't wait to have a conspiracy theory so we can drop the conspiracy one because that was my favorite one to make. okay. All right. Let's get into news. I got a couple quick hits and then, we really didn't decide on the big topic for today, but I think we're going to get into it pretty flawlessly. So first off, I just think this is a fun little side note, and you said you didn't want to talk about it. So we'll go through it real quick, but, all of the attorneys for President Trump's impeachment case,
all of them,
all of them now have quit. It just came out. It came out like, I think 10 minutes after I texted you this, that now all of them have quit his defense team. It was two, then it was five, and now they're all gone. And people were trying to figure out why they're quitting. And the only
legal strategy, legal strategy disagreements.
Well, yeah, that's the biggest thing that people are saying, is that he wants to continue to argue that the election was illegitimate and a fraud, and the attorneys are quitting because that's not what they want to argue, because there's no case for that. I think it is hilarious that anybody who's wants to keep their job in the world outside of, I guess, being a congressperson is just jumping ship. And they also said a lot of attorneys are worried because they don't think they'll get paid, which is obviously
because he's Trump, the richest, poorest person ever.
Yeah.
What I was going to say about this, like, well, we're the point of impeaching him, if I'm correct, is to make it so he can never run again.
That, I mean, that is the is biggest. That the,
what's the other point?
You're yeah, that's the biggest. Like, well, no, they, you know, because
they can put him and Hillary in cages next to each other. I mean, what's the ultimate goal here? I think
the ultimate goal is that he can't run again, because he's hinted that he's going to run again, which would be so silly. I don't know why.
So in his mind, I'm trying to, like, because it doesn't make. I get a lot of his motives, of course, up until recently. So his end game is, if I prove that the election's a fraud, then I'm going to run again.
I think his end game right now is to argue, to just keep driving home the one point that he thinks is true. Like, he didn't get impeached because he said the election's a fraud. He's getting impeached because of what he did on January 6th and how he, you know, incited all this nonsense. That's the biggest reason why they're impeaching him for being seditious. But yeah, his only goal is to keep pushing the same narrative over and over again, so he can keep that base riled up that he has. And that's why he's like, I'm arguing this. And every attorney's like, well, that's not an argument, so we can't argue that. We're going to lose this case if we argue that. And he's like, I think he's just like, I don't care. Let's do what I want to do. I want to keep my base riled up.
Okay. So I have a question here, because this here, we can drop the conspiracy music if you want here. Here's my conspiracy.
Oh, go. Yeah. Hold on. Because yeah. Don't forget to do it then.
Okay.
Right here is conspiracy. I'm so excited.
Conspiracy. This is a conspiracy of the media. Again, I know I always go to the media, of knowing that they are going to have no advertising space to sell with Biden as president. So they have to keep a story going, and they're in collusion with Congress over this, because no one cares about them anymore either. They're whining about putting up a fence and stuff, trying to get attention. Because without Trump, these news organizations' funding is going to go away. No one pays attention to any news unless Trump is in the headlines. If they wanted him to go away, like they pumped for years and years and years, you drop the impeachment case, he's already banned from Twitter, and you stop talking about him, for crying out loud. He would go away. Like, there is only like 50 MAGA people left in the country that actually care to take a bullet for Trump. Like, everyone that voted for him is over it. They don't want to go back to the hysteria. They don't think he's going to drain the swamp. They know he's not. Like, he is of zero threat to anybody. If you do what I told you to do back in 2015, is just ignore the old grumpy geezer. Like, it's so bizarre that it's still a thing that we pushed to the front of our conversation. Like, he's insignificant now. He's done. Like, he's dust. And yeah, there's nothing you can, like, I don't care if he gets his own news network. Give him that. Like, give him his own channel. It's not gonna work. Like, it is based on false ideology. He has no principles. He wavers with whatever hot button thing he thinks he can control and manipulate. And the only reason it works is because we let him do it. We gave him our front page media and let him run amok. And, like, so just stop doing it. And he goes away literally overnight.
We've talked about this before. I definitely think the media plays a big role in Trump's success at any level because people want to watch it. But I do think,
I mean, he's not even on Twitter anymore. That's where he got everything.
But I do think that they're realizing that to some degree. And so instead they're starting to really latch on to the Marjorie Taylor Greens, the Lauren Boberts, the crazy MAGA people who got into Congress.
Congress has been
trending. Well, these people are, I mean,
that little blonde lady, whatever, is a threat to Nancy Pelosi. Give me a break.
But I'm just saying, I think the media is starting to move and focus on those two.
Of course.
And because they need a story. Of course they need a story. That's the media. Stuff. We know that. I mean, that's not, I appreciate you playing the conspiracy.
We're getting mad as a country over each other about it. It's so silly.
Well, I don't know. I don't know who's mad anymore. Like, I think the only people that are mad are that there are certain things that you know, in this world that I think you don't mess with. And I think one of the things that's a really touchy subject for a lot of people and should be, absolutely should be, is school shootings. And anyone, Marjorie Taylor Greene included, that comes out and goes, Sandy Hook was a hoax. Sandy Hook wasn't real. No kids died at Sandy Hook.
Is that what she said? Because yes. The only thing I've ever seen of hers is what the news clip plays, is where she's walking. Because I didn't know even who she was last time we recorded, so I went and looked it up. Is her walking behind the one of the students that was the
David Hogg.
Yeah. And asking, how did you get meetings with like 50 or whatever Congress people?
Yeah.
She said, I don't believe in Sandy Hook.
No, it was in that video. There's a lot more to that video than just that clip.
Because is her point that Sandy Hook didn't happen, or is her point that people are using Sandy Hook as a vehicle to pass gun control?
From what I've seen, it's a combination of both of those things.
Oh.
And then also she's a 9/11 truther as well.
Very easy to, I mean, I didn't hear what she said, so I'm not going to judge or comment on it.
Okay.
But just as Trump got blamed for saying bleach, which he never said, those words never came out of his mouth. I wonder if she is being painted as, I mean, she does seem a little nuts falling around a kid with a mic. It's a little psychotic. Her tactics are dumb.
Yeah.
But is she really saying,
yes,
Sandy Hook didn't happen?
She's a Sandy Hook denier. And then she's also, and this was pre her being in Congress. This was her being a loudmouth on the internet.
Got it.
Back when. And then she was also said that, you know, no plane hit the Pentagon.
She's like Alex Jones got elected to Congress.
Just take away like the red faced screaming and you would have,
you got the blonde face screaming.
Yeah. And I think the media is starting to attach to her. So that's a good thing. I'm always excited to never hear about Trump. It's
And I hate to defend wackadoodle people like her because she seems to be one, but I'm going to pay attention to it now more too. And I'm going to see if what she actually said is what the perception of how she's being portrayed is. Cause it's very, there's so like the media got away with it. And I hate again to sound like I'm defending Trump, but to put words in his mouth that became truth, that things that were never said. So
there were a couple of times that definitely happened. But I mean, those things are always so funny to me when you put words into somebody's mouth because you don't have to with him. You didn't have to.
You just had to wait for his insane
tweet and you had enough.
And so with this woman, the focus and the hyper tension around her, it's like, was she really saying those things? Or were we, you know, taking the fact that she's harassing a Sandy Hook survivor, which is uncalled for at any
Parkland.
Like there's a way. Parkland. Sorry.
Hog was Parkland. Yeah. Parkland. That's okay.
My bad. I always get, never mind.
There's so many. How can you not?
Right. if she's being portrayed in this conspiracy light, or if that's really what she's saying, that's all. I find those things interesting.
Okay. Let's keep going. Let's keep moving along. Just a couple more things. This is hilarious to me that one of the founders of the Lincoln Project, I don't know if you know what the Lincoln Project is.
I had no idea until you sent this over. I had to look it up.
I'm so amazed that you don't. Lincoln Project seems right up your alley as something to hate. So many people hate it.
Oh, I would hate it? It's like a Republican think tank or something.
It's a Republican group, basically, that was like never Trumpers. Like they hated Trump.
Oh, really?
They're the party of Lincoln. Republicans that are saying like this thing is awful, and they're
the party of war. Okay, never mind. That's my little joke. Sorry for everyone that loves Lincoln out there.
They're very big on Twitter, very, very big. But then it came out today. John Weaver, who was a co-founder of the Lincoln Project, has been accused by 21 men of sending them inappropriate messages and explicit offers of professional help in exchange for sex. Now, these are so funny, these stories, to me, because there's these conservative Republicans. It's always a conservative Republican that comes out as the guy who was, you know, George Michaeling it in a bathroom somewhere. Right. Like it's always, I don't know anything about John Weaver. He could have a family. He could be married. They could be going through hell right now. And my condolences if that's the case.
Or he could be an openly gay man.
Or he could be an openly gay. That's true too. I don't know anything about John Weaver.
That's what's funny about the story to me, but keep going.
I think the bigger part of this was then last week, the general manager of the Mets, whose name I don't even care to remember, was fired because he sent 60 text messages to a female reporter. Some were, you know, dick pics, some were inappropriate messages, but 60, and they were all unanswered, 60 text messages to a female reporter. And then she finally was like, okay, this needs to stop.
What's going on?
But 21 men, like, I don't get it, Trav. I don't get it.
Has Anthony Weiner taught us nothing? Like, this is not like the first time people are making these mistakes.
It's insane.
I don't get where, like, and maybe I'm old. Maybe this is how episode reveals how old we are. But like,
it feels like that. Probably
there was back in the day when, you know, girlfriends in high school and stuff, we would text. What is it? 143. Like, I love 143.
I love you, dude. 133. Like, you're a good friend.
So maybe we don't have like, we weren't dating when you texted like they text now. I think, where it's like, maybe these guys have gotten away with it so much in the past that they just assume that, like, well, this is how you do it with everybody. And then they find in this guy's case, 11 that didn't like it. But in the Mets guy, you know what I mean? I don't get where you think this is going to work out well. Unless there's so many people it works out well for.
I guess so. Maybe.
That's my point. It's like,
I don't get it either. And I just, to me, and I use this now as a PSA to all men out there, all young men who are listening or older men who might be listening, after message 40, if they don't reply, it's time to call it a day, man. Well, like, there's even this 21 minutes. Like, you know, there's at some point you have to reflect in the mirror and be like, okay, I'm overdoing it. And I've been caught in that scenario before where I remember when I was, let's say, early 20s, I think, if that's correct. And I met this one girl where I was working at. And dude, I was like, oh, I want to go out with that girl so bad. And I probably called her in a weekend, maybe 35 times. This is before texting. This was before, like, phone was the only realm of conversation. Yes. And she literally called me crazy. And I was like, what? And then I'm like, oh no, that was all so crazy. Like, I look back
on
it.
You were in love.
Or
lust.
Probably lust. But I look back on that, and it's always been such a, like, a good lesson. It was a good lesson for me to have because it really put things into perspective for me. And now I see this though, but now with this technology, it's like nonstop immediacy. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
And it just, you could do it on so many different platforms. I just don't get it. I don't get why these people are doing this.
I do kind of understand why they're doing it, because when men have, let's just say, sex on the brain, whatever it is, our brains go into this altered reality. It really does. Like, I don't know if you're honest with yourself, if you've ever been in that state, but we do weird things that we think are rational to satisfy this urge that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, yeah, like,
of course,
my advice is that there's, as dumb as the movie is, there's many profound ideas in Something About Mary. And one of them that is like, will save your life and really, like, keep you from being in these situations is, mm-hmm, if you're going to go out with a girl as a young man, and I don't want to get into like promoting masturbation or anything like that, but let's face it, everyone's going to do it. So in the movie, the idea is he's going to go out on a date with Mary after not seeing her for years. Mm. And if you have what his friend calls baby batter on the brain, correct me if I'm wrong. It's been I believe
that's 20 correct.
Years since I've seen this movie. Mm-hmm. That you will not be a genuine person with her and she's not going to like you. You're only going to be thinking about, well, how can I get in her pants? And that's all I care about. And because that's sadly, hopefully women know this out there. That's all guys care about. So,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
At a base evolutionary level, we're programmed. Like, we have brains and we can overcome these urges. I'm just saying, like, at our base level, that's very much a motivation for us. Mm-hmm. So he says, "Hey, go, you know, take care of yourself in the bathroom before she gets here. The rest is hilarious in the movie or whatever." But then they end up having the best date ever because he's acting like a rational human being, not some guy hopped up on the testosterone and having to prove that he's worthy of a woman and mating, the evolutionary mating thing or whatever we have in us. Totally. And so again, if you have those urges, gentlemen out there, put your phone down. Men have been taking care of themselves way before the phone was there.
Yeah.
Go figure it out.
Yeah.
I'm not saying anything, just back and look at this situation with a rational brain and you'll see that you were out of your mind nuts on baby batter.
Oh man.
And that's how I see this. Like these men just are too prideful to spank one.
Well, out. Some of them are, they get so up hoity toity and at some level and they're like, well, you know, it won't matter. And you're like, what do you mean it won't matter?
Masturbation will save you millions of dollars in legal fees.
All right, quickly, I want to just hit this.
One's going to be one of those explicit episodes, right?
We probably should do that. We talked about the vaccination last, or whatever it is, the treatment for COVID last week. But I just wanted to talk about this quick story from LA that yesterday, the Dodger Stadium, which has transformed itself, much like Petco in San Diego, to a vaccination super site where you can go get vaccinated there or your shots or whatever it is. But yesterday, a group of anti-vaxxers protested the stadium and protested and blocked the entry to the stadium so no cars could get in to get their vaccinations. This is incredible to me. Because isn't the anti-vax movement about choice? Am I wrong?
I don't know what the anti-vax movement is about.
I have no idea either. Time.
But yeah, it seems weird. I don't know. The cops should just run them over, right?
Well, that's what everybody's saying is why aren't you tear gassing these folks? We don't have to spend a lot of time on it. But
does the news say the number of people?
You know what? That is the weird part about it is that they didn't give a ton of specifics. And a lot of people came out this morning and saying that they could get in other ways, but just like the main entrance was the one that was blocked. And maybe I don't know what the anti-vax movement is about, but I was under the impression it's about you get to choose whether you get the vaccine or not, which also your doctors, I don't know. But if they're blocking the roadway and saying you don't get this choice, that's just ironic to me.
Yes. Very, very dumb.
Okay. Let's move into kind of I would say it's probably the bigger story of this episode we talked about it last week, but it's only gotten weirder and weirder since we talked about it, which is this GameStop Dogecoin. Is it Dogecoin?
Is that how you'd say it, right? Yeah, that was the meme back when it all started from.
Yeah, so that's one of the things.
Shibu dog or whatever
it's called. I would love to understand what Dogecoin is.
Okay. And I kind of know a little bit, but I'm not an expert.
That's fine. And then I'd love to get into the GameStop and go from there.
I think you're minimizing this though, Dallas. I think what we're talking about is the collapse of the US financial system.
Well, this is why I wanted to bring it up.
Human behavior still plays a large part in this. Obviously, that's why GameStop is doing what it's doing. But this could have big repercussions bigger than just GameStop. Like this could be like the first card to get pulled out on a huge house of cards.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think that the people, I've seen so many things in the news since this all happened. And you have all these old hedge fund advisors who are losing their minds.
They're
like
crying. They're literally crying. I don't know the gentleman's name, but on CNBC, on Thursday morning, I think it was. Was it Thursday or Friday morning when they reopened training? Friday morning. Yeah, he was all bullish, you know, looking up into the camera on, you know, his Zoom call with CNBC, like, ah, this GameStop, the fundamentals are not there. This is going to end well for all these idiots that are investing in it, blah, blah, blah. And then by the end of the night when they reopened trading, he's on there literally like fist in hand sobbing, saying, I just care about the integrity of the market. And these, you know, these mom pops, no one cares about all these retirement funds that are going to be going out. Like,
yeah,
literally the 70-year-old billionaire is crying. It's like,
it is. Who's that one guy? I'm trying to look it up right now. But I'm not going to be able to find it. Dang it. He was the guy who was, he's been on one of the CNBC or Fox New Money or whatever it is, but he was talking about how much he hated these kids, basically, or not these kids, but these people who were doing, he called them a bunch of names and this other stuff. And it's like, what you're like, the irony is so thick.
And they it's like, how do you not see it?
How do you not see it? Like, oh my God.
Well, and I don't know if we mentioned this on the last episode, but what's going on is, and why I say this could be the unraveling of the financial system, is what it has exposed is that the people calling the shots are not that smart. They just have had the game so like controlled and walled off from everybody else that they basically got to, you know, play without any challenging teams. Right? Like it would be like me and you got together with a bunch of other 40-year-olds and we set up the game so that we were playing with like toddlers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we're like, every time that we like spike them and like, you know, block them when they're weigh 40 pounds, we like get in the end zone and we like spike them. We're like, we're so good. We're champions. Yeah.
Yeah.
And some dude from Reddit comes on named Deep Effing Value. And exposes this game that these old, you know, insiders have been playing, and they don't know now how to play the game with now a bunch of people equal in actually smarter than them, right? That's what's happening, are now have figured out a way to play on a somewhat equal playing field with them, and they are losing their minds.
I remember years ago, God, I don't know, probably when I turned 18 or something, I got some stock. Yeah, I was gifted some stock and I remember like getting sent to me like these newsletters, basically kind of like reports from the stock that I owned stock in. And then they had these like shareholder events and stuff. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll get into that. That's cool. That'd be fun to go to a shareholder event. And they were like, you don't get to go. And I was like, why don't I get to go? And they were like, you don't own enough stock to be considered a shareholder.
A real shareholder.
And I'm like, wait, what? But I own stock in this. Like, that was the first moment I realized, like, oh, like this is, I'm a nobody.
We'll take your money, but that's about it.
Yeah. You don't own enough of this to have a say what happens to this. And I think that's it, like, you know, we've said this for years on this podcast in different forms and for different reasons, but the little guy will only be beaten down for so long until... Yes. It's time that they rise up and do something either, you know, negative or positive, but something will happen. I mean, you've seen this with, you know, the Black Lives Matter protests. You've seen this with the January 6th insurrection when people, and like, it's all happening now at this time in this year. And I think it's basically happening because no one can do anything. Like,
well, yes.
You know, it's like a perfect storm of we're all sitting at home. And, you know, either working from home or you're unemployed at home, but either way, like you're kind of stuck. You have very limited amount of things that you could actually go do. You've done them all in the first month that you were quarantined. And so now it's like, well, what do we do? Well, now we just try to figure out how to take down Wall Street. And turns out not that hard to do.
Well, and you're right. It's the perfect storm in similar ways, like everyone like that is the richest people in the world now, like the Bezos and the Elon Musk's and all these guys that made their money basically off the internet, right? When they first tried to do this back in mid to late 90s, the dot-com bubble blew up or whatever, is because the old guys in the old system weren't really ready for it yet. But then now the guys making all the shots are the guys that started the bubble, right?
Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm.
And what's happening now, the internet has come along, and I don't want to get into Bitcoin, but like the internet now, like the financial markets over the last 30 years have now moved completely digital. Like the trading, everything now, and with the Robinhood apps and the E-Trade over the last 10 years, they've brought down this trading ability to everybody. And so everybody now, to some respect, has equal access to a game that very few people had. And so what's happening with the internet is these old fogies were not prepared because they didn't see it coming. They didn't have the foresight. They didn't have the vision, basically, because they're too long in the tooth to see how the internet would change finances and the financial market. And so you see this not only with the stocks, but now with like the cryptocurrencies and how everyone, when they couldn't invest in GameStop, it seemed like the rumblings were like, well, let's go over to cryptocurrencies and fart around over here and see what happens.
Yeah.
And so now we're watching this happen. And when we look back on this period, it'll seem like it happened overnight, but we are watching literally trillions of dollars starting to be shifted in financial markets because of the, basically the exposure that the stock market got that is actually a casino and always has been, and actually probably less regulated in the casino. So that's why I always love when Elizabeth Warren, her horrible analogies of the stock market is like a casino and it shouldn't be, just shows she has no fundamental understanding of the stock market. It has always been, to my understanding, a way to generate money out of nothing by evaluating a company based on things. Now, companies do make money, right? Like there is positive cash flow or free cash flow, whatever you want to call it. But when you come up with an evaluation, like what a company's worth, it's way more than like their free cash flow. And that evaluation, like, not everyone agrees that it's the same. That's why you trade that value on the stock market.
Yeah.
So it's always a casino. Of course it is. It's just a different, it's just a different game. And so go ahead.
No. If you wanted to finish that thought, you can.
Well, I'm just the thing that I like about this is that the little guy is making waves and there's enough of people linking arms, and really it's like democracy in action. But what I'm seeing happen, which is going to make it less pure than I want it to be, is they're going to try to like regulate this thing. Like the government has already jumped in and said, well, how can we? And that's only going to crush the little guy. It is the regulations. I don't care how you look at it. I know that we want the playing field to be fair or whatever, but when regulations happen, and I saw it happen in our own business after the 2008 thing, is the only banks that can comply after the new Frank Dodd financial regulations were the big banks.
Yeah.
So all the little banks went away.
Well, that is something we talked about it last week a little bit, and over the years, is that like the internet, that's why they want to regulate the internet. That's why they're trying to regulate the internet, because people on the internet are figuring out how to get stuff done. And it's like,
without them being in the middle.
Yeah. They don't have to worry about going through the right channels. They're going through the channels that they're creating, and then they take it down and people are all aghast. It's like, if you were a billionaire and you didn't plan on possibly at one point like losing that money, then you've never ever paid attention to the history of the stock market. One, because every 40 years or so, everyone loses all their money. So it's like, well, what are you doing?
Yeah, if you're a billionaire, like, you've checked out like the Ottoman Empire and stuff. You're so, done. You're set up to lose. Yeah.
So like, that part is funny to me. And what I think is fascinating about all of this, is how quickly, I mean, there's 8 million tweets to this effect, but how quickly everyone went from being like, an election expert to being a stock market expert on Twitter. You know, like everybody automatically knew everything about the stock market.
Right.
And you had all these people, talking about GameStop and what was the other one? BlackBerry. And there was one more.
AMC was buying movies.
AMC, thank you.
Yeah.
And like, I got to get in. I got to buy it. I got to get in. And and then Robinhood goes and shuts it down, basically, that you can't trade on their platform. And I know the argument they're going to make. The argument they're going to make about the reason they did that is because obviously there's no way that GameStop can hold this stock price. And so let's say you or I, who's a random.
Can I just real quick?
Sure.
And continue your train of thought. But why couldn't it if no one sold it?
because the problem is the GameStop itself will have to perform at a level where they're, like you just said, they have to, in theory, have that value.
No, they don't. Watch. So, and then maybe I'm wrong. And again, I'm not a stock trader or whatever. I'm trying to figure this out like everyone else. But if we,
if you're listening,
decided,
and you know,
if we decided to all go in and buy something for that amount of money, and then we held on to it, is that not like holding its value? As long as no one sells it for a cheaper price, it's that value is still there. So if we all go and if a million people buy 10 shares of GameStop stock and no one ever sells it, does it not hold that value?
I mean, I guess it does, but then GameStop has to do something with that value and they aren't prepared to do that, right?
No, it doesn't have to do anything. It's just parked there. It's just parked in that stock. They literally could do nothing.
But
the stock is not performed on if they're making money or not. The only reason that matters is one for dividends so they can pay their thing back, but so that people go, oh, they're making money. The stock is worth more now. Let's buy it at a higher price.
Yeah, so, I think.
So bit like, for example, and I hate to go to Bitcoin, but like Bitcoin doesn't do anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what makes it like the perfect, in my opinion, monetary asset is because it's not based on any other performance. It's just based on, well, what do you think this scarce asset is worth? And so in the same regard, that is what a stock is, regardless of what the company does. We just have these metrics set up based on how the stock traders or whoever evaluators back in the day or over the years have set up a method of evaluating a company's worth. But if people buy something and don't sell it, it essentially holds the value because it's only worth less if you sell it at a lower price. So if all these million people decide we're never going to sell GameStop, it's worth whatever they held it for.
I
might be totally wrong, but that's what my perception is.
Well, first off, no, the biggest problem with that is kind of what I was saying, but was going to kind of finish saying before, is that people aren't going to hold it at that price. They're going to sell it off because they want to make money. Like the average person who saw this little thing happening went on their Robinhood app before Robinhood stopped them and they bought a bunch of shares of GameStop and then they made a ton of money. Well, they're going to sell that. They're not going to keep that. And then it's just going to keep pitfalling. And that's what I think. I think Robinhood's defense is that, hey, we saw this coming. This will fall. We're protecting our users from actually losing a bunch of money in the situation. Whether that's right or wrong, I think that will be their defense.
That was their defense in a way. And it was also like they couldn't clear all the stocks that were being bought. So like when you buy a stock on Robinhood and you click that little button, you're not actually getting the stock right away.
Sure.
You're getting an order that then they have to go in and clear out and, you know, as soon as they can. And a lot of times it takes more than a day or whatever, but so yeah, I mean,
okay.
I lost my train of thought.
It's okay. It's all right. I was saying
essentially, I don't think that the company performance matters as long as people don't sell. And so the idea that I'm reading on all these Reddit channels, because I got in before they blocked people from joining that Wall Street Bets one, is, don't sell it. Like, this is not a pump and dump. This is a pump and hold. If you hold, it doesn't go down. And then here's what would happen. So GameStop could essentially do nothing, right? Yeah. And people would go, oh my gosh, you have some GameStop stock? I want some. And then it could like retain value like a piece of art. Like this, the stock is what the stock is, regardless of what the company's doing.
My favorite tweet of the whole thing was from Blockbuster's official account saying, hey, we see what you guys are doing. like, it's so funny. All right.
Anyways, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Now,
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say you wanted to talk about the other crazy thing that was very volatile.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think this will be the last thing before we get into the good news and end in. But Dogecoin.
Yes.
Why did I buy $14 worth of Dogecoin? Why did I do that? And what the hell is Dogecoin?
There was a pump and dump going on with that. So that's just fun.
Okay.
So Dogecoin or whatever, Dogecoin or Dogcoin or whatever you want to call it. I looked up the history on it. I had heard about it for years. But it was set up as like a joke. Some either NASCAR or some car racing event that one of these guys was at with his friends that was not into the car racing had like that 2013 meme on it with the dog, you know, mm-hmm. with the Comic Sans fonts or whatever.
Yeah.
And it said like Dogecoin, a digital currency or something like that. And it became a tweet and a joke, and then a domain was bought, and the guy at, and I don't remember names. I don't need to get, and I'll get them all confused. Hey, anyone want to start this crypto with me? And someone said, yeah, sure. And it's literally as simple as copying Bitcoin is what he did. Copied the code for Bitcoin, changed some things he didn't like about Bitcoin. Like one thing about Bitcoin is since it started over the next 150 whatever years, it will eventually run out of coins to be mined. Where Dogecoin was just like, you might get nothing for solving this one, or you might get 500, or you might get one, or you might, like, it was a joke kind of system. There was a fixed amount. Instead of 21 million, they said, let's make 100 billion. And they didn't even pre-mine any of it, which most people do. And it was just a joke. And so to me, what it is the power of memes.
Yeah.
And like, for whatever reason, that little dog, when you look at it, it makes you like chuckle somehow. It looks like this dog is kind of judging you, and there's, it's just, it communicates a lot in an image.
Yeah.
We fall in love with memes. I'm telling you, like, memes are extremely powerful. They're the new political cartoon. They're the new way to like communicate, you know, a paragraph's worth of information into one single image. Mm-hmm. And so the reason I think that the Dogecoin has is started to take off, because I bought, you know, $100 worth over the summer when it was like a third of a penny. And you went in your head, like, the thing was like Elon tweeted about it over the summer, like the sand cloud with the Doge dog's head in it, taking over the, you know, the city or whatever.
Yeah.
And everyone does this in their head. They go, oh, it's at a third of a penny now. So if I, you know, bought $100 worth and it goes to $100, I'll be a millionaire. You know, you can quickly do that math in your head, but then you don't know about market cap. You don't know how many coins are in circulation. You don't know how much, like, oh, for it to go to $100 and there's 100 billion of them, there'd have to be like, you know, billions and billions of dollars coming into this coin to reach that. You don't do all that math in your head. You're just like, oh, I can own 20,000 Doge coins for $100. I'm going to do that. Cause when it's, now, here's the thing. If it does do that market cap, because the money is in the world to do that. So if enough people like think the joke is funny enough and are willing to put money into it, it can be a real store of value and a real exchange. Like, it's set up to be a real cryptocurrency, but it was done. The motivation was not out to make a lot of money or to, you know, change the way that we do contracts or any of these other things that all these cryptocurrencies are trying to do. It's like, oh, this was a funny joke. We love this meme. Let's make a, you know, a joke coin, and it, people like it.
Well, I'll tell you this, my $14 is now worth $7. So, you know,
well, my $100, I'm going to look real quick, and don't come after me for all my money here. Let me open up Robinhood and see, because that's where my Doge is.
Yeah. It's where mine is. I bought it right before they started telling people they couldn't buy it anymore.
So my Doge is at $1,118.
Well, and that's out of how much?
$100.
Wow. Well, that's because you got into it.
Because it was like my average price was like 33.
Yeah.
33's, I don't know.
No, I get what you're saying.
A third of a penny. And so now it's at 30 something cents. So it's like.
Yeah, I didn't. I jumped in at the wrong time.
I don't know my math, but it's like every penny that goes up, I get like 400. I don't know what it is.
I'm sorry. All right. Well, listen.
But if it goes to the buck, man, it's going to be, I can pay off all my debt. That'd be nice.
There you go. That'd be nice. That'd be nice there. Dude, hold the line,
Dogecoin. Hold.
Hold. All right. Let's get to some good news.
Yes. Your turn.
Good news. That's all I want to hear.
It is my turn. My good news is very short. Just because it's a very short thing, but I read that production for Ted Lasso season 2 is happening. It's underway. Production for Ted Lasso season 2.
Well, I haven't seen season 1, so now I have a bunch to look forward to.
It's incredible news, because if you have Apple TV,
I do.
then you, Ted Lasso needs to be appointment watching. It's Sam, my wife, during this whole lockdown thing has always been searching for shows to watch. And, but she only wants to watch happy shows, 'cause she's like, everything else around us sucks. So let's watch happy shows. And it's been really hard to find shows that have any kind of positive spin on them. And then people kept saying, watch Ted Lasso, watch Ted Lasso. So we watched it. First season, I think, is 10 or 11 episodes, half hour. It's comedy. And I think we watched it all in like 3 days.
Wow.
It is so funny. Everything about it is like positive.
Yeah.
Like it's not like I can't tell you how much of a joy it is to watch Ted Lasso. It's Jason Sudeikis is the lead. He's wonderful. Like it is just such a wonderful show. And the fact that they're doing a season 2 and it's in production, that's like the best news I could have heard.
Great news. Well, good. I have something to look forward to now. I mean, I have a lot of shows to catch up on too. Much like, you know, playing video games, I don't have much time to do that.
Yeah, no. We're watching It's Always Sunny and we're on season 9 and there is 3 more to go.
Yeah,
it's kind of crazy. It's Always Sunny is, there's 14 seasons.
Well, the show I'm watching right now is not positive at all. It's called Yellowstone. And
is it any good?
It kind of is kind of good.
I was interested in it, but.
You like Kevin Costner?
Yeah, I love Kevin Costner.
Because it's like, one, it's like the least Kevin Costner-y cause. It's good. Like he's playing like characters now. Do you know what I mean?
I love it.
Because I like Kevin Costner too, but he's Kevin Costner.
He was always just Kevin Costner. Yeah.
So now he's kind of roughing up around the edges and stuff. So it's good.
All right. Well, it's your turn to pick a song, Trav.
Okay. Well, I hate to be a downer on my song pick here, but we were in the car, my family, my two girls, and Weezer, Say It Ain't So, came on the radio, and my daughter asked me to turn it down.
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh, wow. I'm like, Audrey, this song is amazing. Like, it's such a good song. The more you listen to it, the better it gets.
Uh-huh.
And then the next song came on, and she's like, oh, Daddy, turn this one up. And I know she never heard it before. I never heard it before. But she liked the beat of it or whatever, and I had to, like, you know, Shazam it or whatever to figure out what it was.
Yeah.
And it was Billie Eilish.
Oh, okay.
And it's very, like, rhythmic and like catchy, but like depressive. Is that the right way to put it?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know much about her, but like my brain was just like, whoa, she made uninfluenced at all. Like, I don't play Weezer around the house much. You know what I mean? I let them listen to mostly what they want.
Mm-hmm.
She like made a decision on what she liked and didn't like right there. And so my song choice is Say It Ain't So by Weezer, because I ain't playing any Billie Eilish. I don't know that well enough.
I appreciate
it. But for different reasons. Like my heart is breaking that my child didn't love the music I loved at first listen. So
that's a good song. It's a good pick.
It's
Everything's Fine. Please follow us on Twitter at EveryFinePod. That is at EveryFinePod. Go to the website, everythingsfinepodcast.com. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, and leave us, you know, a review if you want. I don't know. But we appreciate all the listeners, and we'll see you next week, hopefully.